RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Gareth Wyn-Jones is a farmer in Wales with a large following on YouTube and other social media platforms. He's been speaking out against the push for plant-based foods, calling for local, seasonal, and sustainable food production. 2.47 million followers on YouTube, over 67,000 followers on X, and over 20,000 on Instagram. Not too bad. And Gareth joins us now from Wales, from his farm, to talk about the National Trust's plans to make their cafe menus 50% vegan to achieve net zero in the UK, and the implications for people like him, farmers. Gareth, welcome to our radio station. Thanks for beaming in.
No problem at all.
Those are really impressive followings you have there. Gareth, how did you get to that? How did you achieve that? You're a star.
I don't know about that. I'm pretty controversial, to be honest with you. I say it as I see it, you know. I used to work quite a lot for the BBC. Used to do quite a bit of presenting for them.
Right.
I don't tend to get much work from them now for some reason.
Yeah, you're on a list, are you?
I don't know. No, it's just, it is what it is, to be honest with you. But you know, my main aspect in life is to try and engage the general public into the problems within the farming industries. You know, farming can be a roller coaster, from the challenges of weather to different policies from government, from supermarkets pushing prices down. You know, all these things add to the challenges.
Yeah. Can you tell us where your farm is? And I'm really interested to hear the pronunciation of the location.
It's Llanfairfechan, on the foothills of the Carneddau mountain range. It could have been worse. I could have lived in Llanfair, Pwll Gwyngyll, Golgerill, Llwyndrob, Wellyn, Tysiliog, Gog a Gog. So that would have been a long one.
Wow.
27,000 acres of open common, where many, many farmers have the rights to turn their livestock onto this area. So it's a very special area. We have some of the rarest flora and fauna on these mountains. You know, we have a hefting system where we move our sheep into different areas as the vegetation grows during the summer. We only graze the sheep from the 1st of April till the 26th of October. So the mountain gets a chance to, you know, recharge its batteries. And, you know, once the spring flush comes, the ewe lambs go up, and then during the summer, the sheep and lambs go up. And then more into the autumn now, there's a lot of food here and ewes up there, so they can be hefted. And quite similar to the salmon, you know, when the salmon spawn, you know, they come back to where they started their lives. And that's
right.
Quite important for us, you know, as a hefting farm, that we take the sheep onto the best grazing areas for them to understand that that's how our system works.
Right. No, I get it. So what is the National Trust, Gareth, and how does it relate to farming in the UK? Just so we can get an idea of how this kind of works and the pieces fit together.
Okay. So the National Trust has a hell of a lot of acreage. Okay. It has hundreds and thousands of hectares, which mainly has been donated to them through different systems, you know, from big estates not paying, you know, not being able to afford their tax. So they would literally just have to give the land over to these big corporations, which is, you know, it's a massive, massive landowner. It's a massive landowner. I think it has 1,300 tenanted farms, so families living on these tenanted farms, which sometimes can be difficult because, to be totally honest with you, I put a post out, well, a couple of days ago, and the messages I had off some of the tenanted farmers on the National Trust land was a bit scary.
Really?
Because, I'll tell you why. You know, I'm not going to beat about the bush. What I understood about a lot of the messages that were given to me was how these farmers are a afraid of saying anything against the trust, just in case they would be, you know, detrimental to their farming businesses, the land, or their family farms, you know, where they live with their with their children and their siblings. And yeah, it was a bit of a shocker to me, because, you know, as a big landowner like that, and as a big corporation that makes millions, and we're talking, you know, millions, with the big stately homes and all the membership they get of people, I think, you know, we need to ask questions of these organisations every now and again, as somebody that doesn't have a lot of connection with them, only due to just a few acres that we rent off them. I just think that, you know, I have a big platform, and I should be asking these questions, and they should be asking questions of themselves as well.
Have you had any grief for asking questions or being too public about any comments that you might have made?
I'm always getting grief.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, right? From them.
Not yet. No, not yet. Look, if we don't open these conversations, we are never going to find solutions and answers. And for me, you know, in Wales, we have our own language. You know, we're first language Welsh speakers.
Yep.
We're seeing, there's a place called Nant Francon, okay? There's a farm called Blaen y Nant. It's a beautiful farm. And it's kept many generations of farming families. That now is being planted out to trees. You know, for me, I haven't got a problem with trees. The right tree in the right place. I believe hedges and edges as well, you know, that we should be planting more hedgerows, which is great for wildlife if that's what we want, and carp and sequentia. You know, these things are very, very important. But when you take a family away from a farm, that's it. You know, especially these farms, which are hefted. Like I said to you earlier, you know, these people have hundreds of years of experience of working that land, you know, protecting it, keeping the balance. And once you take the people away from that land, things change. And, you know, we hear so much about rewilding. I've got a little spot up here on the mountain, which was fenced off about 22 years ago. I did it as a bit of an experiment. It's just wasteland, okay? And I will tell you, it is a tinderbox. It is ready to burn any second. Brambles, yeah, there's a couple of saplings there, gorse bushes, but is that something that we need across a rural country like Wales, which is very similar to New Zealand, I believe? You know, my son went to New Zealand for a year working. I went out there to do a bit of filming, loved it. And I always remember what he said. He said, New Zealand's like Wales on steroids. It's just, okay. Yeah, it's very, very similar. And, you know, we need to protect these livelihoods. It's a living, working countryside. And without the people on that land, we lose our language, we lose our culture, and we lose our way of life.
Yeah, it's interesting, that rewilding idea. I think we've heard that spoken about here. And it seems to be part of, would you say that, okay, we're talking about the National Trust here. Has there been a change in mission from them, or a change in culture, or some sort of ideology that is moving into an organization like this? Because disregarding what you've said, I mean, human beings are just as much as part of the environment as everything else, right? I mean, we can agree on that, can't we? I mean, and the time span spent there, it does become part of the flora and fauna, if you want to think of like that. And there does seem to be some kind of attack on farming. And we'll get to the vegan cafe meal shortly. Mm-hmm. But is that how you and other farmers are feeling? Like, there's an effort almost to move you off in preference for, well, as you say, trees, et cetera, that the human factor is now seen as a problem, as a sort of a blight on the land.
Yeah, totally, totally. You know, as a farmer with a big following, I think every single day there is a different story, trying to damage the agricultural sector, especially the livestock sector, you know, from sheep grazing on the uplands. You know, there's all kinds of things. Look, we can all learn. We can all learn going forward from new techniques. You know, we talk about regenerative. My family's been on this farm for 375 years, okay?
Wow. You know? Yeah.
We have one of the first axe factories in the world going back 6,000 years on this land.
Gee.
You know, that's what we're talking about, history. We've got some of the rarest flora and fauna. You know, my father's always taught me, we're only custodians of this land.
Right.
Even though we do believe that we own it, we're only custodians. But what we should be thinking as society is we should be leaving the land in a better state than we're giving it to the next generation. You know, these are important things. But when you had the policies in the 1970s and 80s, you know, when they were pushing for sheep numbers, we can't hide away from the overgrazing. You know, we can't hide away from what some people did. But it's different now. The biggest problem, I believe, is that we're losing the people from the land. Our average age, I think, is about 67 of the farming community. We have massive suicide rates within our industry, which is scary. And I think a lot of this mainstream media, supermarkets putting pressure for pricing. We've got, you know, the policies that are coming from government are unworkable. And as well, we've seen, you know, different weather patterns, which can, you know, devastate the agricultural sector. So there's a lot of pressure on these people that are trying to, you know, produce affordable food. So how do we address that? Well, we cannot keep being attacked. And I mean this, attacked by mainstream media. You know, we hear the big corporations want to take their food away from, you know, the grass-based into factories. We've got, you know, all these companies making these fake meats. My God. And stating claims that, you know, their meat is 100 times better for the environment and for you as a human being. I tend to disagree. I think there is nothing better than something that's grass-fed, local, and, you know, seasonal and sustainable. Because the Carnarvon mountain range, for one example, now that's 27,000 acres. That mountain range is storing more carbon than any forestry in the UK. Nobody speaks about it. You know, the carbon sequestration on there is unbelievable. Now, each spring, when that grass and all them different floras and faunas grow, them sheep go up there, and them white fluffy things mow the top of these grasses. Every time they are grazing, that then regrows and sequences more carbon into the soil. You know, we get wool from them, we get meat from them, you know, we get milk from them. All these things are feeding people. And we have to start to educate people that we're here for you. Without the consumer and the customer, the farmer doesn't have a purpose. We're here to produce food, you know, affordably, ethically, sustainably, environmentally friendly. There's a lot of boxes to tick. But we really need to get the support of the general public. That's when the governments will listen. That's when the supermarkets will start to think, yeah, we should be paying a fair price for this because these people are doing it the right way. And that's the frustration I feel sometimes that's not put over within the mainstream media. And that's across the board. That's across the board.
Yeah, meantime, people are eating ultra-processed foods. They're eating vegetable oils that are killing them.
Yeah.
They are eating too many carbohydrates. We have a doctor on here that has a feature every Monday. He's a very smart guy. He says, don't eat it if it hasn't walked, grown, flown, or swum.
Yeah.
Don't go near it.
Yeah, I have an old farming friend that says it's got to be surf or turf for him every time. And I quite like that one as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think we're seeing an obesity epidemic. We're seeing, you know, diabetes. We're seeing all these diseases. We are what we eat, however we look at it. You know, the healthier we eat, the better we are. And I'm not just talking physically, I mean mentally, emotionally. You know, there's a lot of people that are feeling depressed, you know, mental strain and stress. Maybe they're not getting enough sunshine. Maybe they're getting the wrong foods. But I just don't believe that these processed foods are good for people. as somebody that grows his own veg and fruits and salads and, you know, shoots, I hunt, I fish, you know, I try to fill my freezer with the food to feed my family, but to do it in an ethical way and yeah. You know, just try and think of the positives. Look, we've got a growing population in the world and it's not going to be easy to feed everybody. But I think we can look for solutions, and I don't think them solutions are in factories filling people with gloop. And once that gloop takes hold of these people, they get sick then, and then they have to look for a pharmacist to have 10 or 15 pills a day. You know, it makes you think sometimes that it's all a bit of a game for these people.
You can see why they're coming at the farmers, Gareth, because and anyone that offers any healthy alternative, because the business model is all about what you just described, many would argue, you know. To have unhealthy people, you can sell pharma to them.
Yeah.
The healthy, you can't, you know.
Yeah, well, I say quite often on my social medias, you know, we need the farming food revolution in this world. But I, you know, I don't know if you've seen the video. I say, you know, you're going to need a doctor maybe once, twice a year, a policeman the same. You're going to need a dentist, but you are going to need a farmer maybe once, twice, or three times every single day.
Yeah, good
point. And I think that message has resonated a hell of a lot across the board. And I mean that as, you know, a farmer to any kind of diet, if you're vegan, if you're vegetarian, if you're carnivore, if you're pescatarian, flexitarian, there's a hell of a lot of Aryan bloody diets out there.
Yes, there is, yeah.
But you know, where they're producing that food for, you know, the vast majority of people and the vast majority of farms in the world at the moment are family farms, you know? And people forget, you know, they look at the big corporates, and there's some big corporate agricultural units, don't get me wrong, that maybe don't showcase the agricultural sector in the best way. But if people aren't willing to pay for that food, cheap food will always be there, and cheap food will come at a cost to the animal, it'll come at a cost to the environment, and it'll come at a cost to the farmers, you know. So we have to work together to educate people to have an understanding where the food comes from, follow a farmer, understand the farmer, you know, start to engage with these people. And I think maybe that is why, you know, I've created such a following, because, you know, I'm not like very political. I wouldn't say I'm anti-establishment, but I just say it as I see it, you know, and I'm not going to be everybody's cup of tea. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of haters out there, but to be honest with people, I think is the best way. Honesty is the best policy. And if you, you know, tell people what's going on, what your problems are, they tend more to engage with it, and they'll start asking questions then within the supermarkets. You know, they might ask questions on their members of parliament and, you know, how this government runs things. And there's nothing wrong with that, to get that conversation going.
Yeah. So to the National Trust, considering a proposal to increase their cafe food to 50% plant-based / vegan, that's up from 40% in the next 2 years. And they say it's to help achieve net zero emissions, voting on it at the upcoming annual general meeting. And really interested to get your comment on this. They believe reducing meat and dairy consumption can contribute to sustainability. I don't know what they mean about that. Maybe you've got an explanation. And support broader environmental goals, including freeing up farmland. Well, we've already talked about that, for nature restoration. So that's where they're coming from.
Yeah.
So do you think this vote that's coming up, are they trying to appeal to the younger market with the vegan food? Because I think younger, particularly females, are very vegan orientated.
Do you know what? If that's what they're publicity campaign about, you know, I really, really feel sorry for them. If they wanted to do something, they've got some fantastic farms that are under their tenancy agreements. Now, you know, for me, I would be sourcing everything from farm, everything from their farm. Imagine if they could say that 80% of the food that's grown in their cafe or produced has come off a National Trust farm. They've got the people to do it. You know, imagine spinning that round as a publicity stunt. That would be 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times better publicity stunt, in my opinion. And we talk about local, you know, we talk about local food, we talk about seasonal food. Is it the way forward to be shipping avocados from Mexico when the Mexicans can't afford the avocados anymore? Because this new super vegan food is becoming global and everybody wants it, and the people living in that country can't afford it. You know, this is the realism that people need to understand. If they invested in some of these tenanted farms, you know, put some polytunnels up, get them growing some tomatoes, get them lettuce, you know, we could then work together to find a local abattoir, take the cows in, take the sheep in, get that mutton, get that lamb, get that beef, get what the pork, whatever it is, onto their menus. Imagine that by creating more sustainable seasonal food and boosting the local economy and giving back to the people that are paying them rent for the farm, you know, investing in the future of these farms by, you know, asking them, what do you think you can grow? And as a farmer in this country, you know, I know we have a temperate climate, we have a lot of rain, same as you. We can grow a lot of this green stuff, grass, and we can transport that grass into top quality food. So if it's beef, if it's lamb, you know, if it's cheese, if it's milk, if it's yogurt, there's a lot of food that comes directly from a plant-based animal. Now, for me, that would be the way forward. You know, these are the discussions that the National Trust should have. There's a lot of farmers out there, you know, that are planting hedgerows, are planting trees. But, you know, we have a government policy that they're talking about every farm in Wales should be planting 10% of the land. It's just total bloody farming suicide, in my opinion. Yeah, let's get some grant to grow some hedges. Let's double fence. We've just done a 800-metre area on the mountain. Me and my cousin, you know, we gave a metre and a half off our land, either end each, and we've planted a massive big hedgerow there. And it's coming along pretty well. These are the things that, you know, we're willing to sacrifice. But you can't sacrifice 10% of that land when your profit margins is so slow. So let's say you have a 1,000 sheep on the farm. Well, you're going to have to lose 10% of that. But it's not just 10% of that. They want another 10% for habitat. So it's 20% of your land that you could be losing there in one swoop. So you go from producing 1,000 sheep to 800. You know, it's and as our financial constraints are harder, it doesn't give you then the opportunity to reinvest in the farm. Well, it doesn't give you the opportunity to pay your bloody bills, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's that difficult. And it worries me. It worries me as the younger generation aren't coming into the farming industry. Where is the next generation going to come from?
Well, when you mentioned the average age before and you asked that question, it feels a bit grim. Surely all of this is happening because, I hate to say it, Gareth, they kind of want to make it impossible to do what you do.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, you know, is it time for a farming food revolution in this world? My worry is, and this is, you know, I've said this quite a few times, my worry is the poorer people in the world are going to suffer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because food will get very, very expensive. We can see, you know, the patterns, you know, the wet weather we've had in here has hit the crops. And, you know, some of these wheat farmers now aren't getting a fair price because they're importing it from all four corners of the country. You know, if our own countries aren't supporting our own industries and offsetting that to another country, which can, you know, spray any kind of sprays and insecticides onto their crops with no legislation, no problems, so they can produce that food a lot cheaper than they can do in this country. Well, you know, the government themselves are shooting themselves in the foot. And when food shortages hit supermarkets, hit the shelves, that's when people will realise how important the farmers are. And maybe by then it'll be too late. So we need to be pushing it now. We need to be getting fair prices for what we're producing. We need government backing our industries in any way that they can, because if they don't, you know, I think it's going to be a very, very slippery slope. And the first thing that will be hit will be the poorer people in our society.
Gareth, it's been really interesting hearing what you've had to say. And there'll be plenty of people listening here, I'm sure, thinking it kind of feels like it's sort of the same here as well. You know, you're facing the same with your own, you know, nuances.
If you think of it, you think of it. Who is the last people on earth to go out and protest? I believe the farmer, because they've got livestock, they've got crops to tend to.
Yeah.
But if you look over the last 4 or 5 years, Sri Lanka, New Zealand, you look at the Netherlands, Germany, Spain, Wales, I've been out protesting. You know, we went out and we stood down in the government buildings in Wales where thousands of farmers turned up to air their concerns and their worries about the future of our industry. America, Canada, you know, this is not just a problem for Wales. This is a global problem. And of course, we can't hide away from, there is issues. But if we just cut off the snake's head by getting rid of the farmer, you know, they've got nothing left. They've got nothing left. And I think that's where governments across the world have forgotten the importance of the people that work the land. And, you know, once they're gone, they're gone. I've got a farming friend now. He sold up 2 weeks ago. He's got the auction of his machinery. His good friend of mine, Steve Evans, in partnership with his mother and his father on the farm. And they'd had a massive TB outbreak. A lot of other things as well, but you know what? They've just sold up. They've just sold up and got out. And they've done that for their own mental health.
Yep, I understand.
And, you know, they've had to take they've been on that farm over 100 years, you know, to take a decision like that. And he's got a son that would have farmed after him, but they had to make that decision. They were losing £30,000 a month on the milk check because they couldn't restock because of TB. You know, these are ludicrous policies that nobody in government is willing to address, you know, and talk about. And it's difficult. It is difficult. And I think we'll see a few more people as well just getting out, which is sad. It's very, very sad.
Gareth Wynne-Jones, Welsh farmer, speaking to us from his farm, his actual farm. Great following on social media. Probably the easiest platform is YouTube to check what Gareth has to say. 2.47 million followers there. Gareth, thanks for your time. Good luck and plenty to think about there. We appreciate you coming on our program.
Diolch yn fawr iawn. Thank you very much. That is in Welsh. And let's hope we can work together to find solutions.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.